Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
And we're into extra time. Kia ora and welcome to Extra Time. I'm Stephen Hewson. Well, the Silver Ferns are finally back on court, this week playing in Palmerston North against New Zealand A, the New Zealand men's team and the New Zealand under-21 side. That's all in preparation for next week's three-test series against Commonwealth Games champions England and Hamilton. It's a new era for the Silver Ferns, with leading players from the World Cup success in Liverpool last year having retired. Laura Langman, Casey Kopua and Maria Folau have all gone, so the Ferns are in a rebuilding phase. To discuss just how all that's going, we're joined by Kerry Wills from the Silver Ferns coaching staff, sports journalist Bridget Tunnicliffe from RNZ and Locker Room's Suzanne McFadden. Kerry, welcome in. What have you made of the Silver Ferns form at this Palmerston North tournament, and where do you think things are heading ahead of England next week?
Probably not where we would, you know, we want to play slick, sublime netball, but the reality is that we're working on a few things and different combinations, and this is a little bit of a trial situation, so there's a lot more changes than you would normally see. But I think people can be reassured that the athletes have played a lot of netball this year through ANZ Premiership, and our context has given us a little bit of an advantage through COVID-19, actually. We've had a lot of netball domestically, and these players have all survived two very, very, very tough camps before coming into this series. And, of course, the men in particular are just amazing opponents to play before a series. So I think by the time the Silver Ferns hit England, you will see some pretty good netball.
You talk about playing slick netball, but things not quite where you want them to be. What in particular, I suppose, has this tournament highlighted as to where things just not quite hitting the mark?
Oh, it's really, and I, it's so cliched, but it's just the connections on court. As you mentioned in your intro, there is a bit of change in this team, and there's a new leadership group, and there's new players coming in, and it's everybody finding their feet and playing the level of netball that we've come to expect from the Silver Ferns, from that amazing World Cup squad. So some of the connections have just got a little bit to go, and the new players coming in are getting better each time, but they've got to come up and meet those very strict standards that Nolan sets out.
Yeah, very much sort of there's a development phase, isn't there, for many players?
Yeah, development to me, I kind of think of the under-21s. It's just the way I think. But what we're trying to do is build capacity in players, and therefore build the capacity of the squads, both Silver Ferns and below, so that there are more players to choose from when the time comes. And I think we're seeing quite a bit of competition, particularly in that mid-court. So the capacity is there in terms of the raw talent, and now it's about people stepping up into a zone that they've never been in before, which for some of them is challenging. So, yeah, but that's what high performance is all about.
I mean, certainly one player on the development pathway is 18-year-old Northern Mystics goal shoot Grace Weke, the New Zealand-born Weke, whose parents came to New Zealand from Nigeria, is 1.93 metres tall, or 6'3". But she only started playing netball 5 years ago at Avondale College, and she was then spotted at the Te Pai Park courts in Henderson by New Jack's club president, Millie Manuel-Nathan. Millie Manuel-Nathan told Morning Report's Corin Dan earlier this week, to start with, the only thing Weke had going for her was her height.
She was watching a friend playing, and I was coaching one of my baby teams, and I just happened to see her standing there. It was the height that caught my eye. I looked at her and I said, "Do you play netball?" And she said, "Oh, sort of." And I said, "Oh, do you play for school?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Do you enjoy it? Are you a good player?" Because of her height. She said, "Oh, sort of." So I said, "Do you want to come and play club? And she said, "Oh, okay, then. And I said, come on, have a game today. And she said, oh, no, next week. So I couldn't wait because of the height. I thought, whoa, I've just got myself a silver fern. That was in my mind. So what? When she comes the following week to play for me, wow, that was a nightmare, to be honest. Couldn't catch, couldn't jump, couldn't do anything.
But you clearly saw something special, and so what happened then? She picked it up pretty quick?
No, she didn't. It took us like 2.5 years.
Wow.
And that's been really pushing her. She's lucky that in my club we have ANZ players, so she had the privilege of playing with Grace and Rachel Rasmussen, so, you know, they were giving their little bit as well. And then she got in the representative teams for our centre, but only because of height. It wasn't because she was good. But we knew that she had something there, and I wanted to keep at her, you know, so she can look ahead at what she can achieve and what she's got.
So there must have been some real determination for her to stick at it if she was struggling to begin with. So she must have seen the potential that you saw in her?
Yes, I think it was the environment she was in. We're a netball club that we don't have flash people, and we're a whānau group, so she felt, you know, part of us. I took her in like a whāngai'd mokopuna, so that's my, you know, adopted child. So I brought her into the club, and she became one of my daughters and one of everyone else's sisters. And it was hard for her because she's Nigerian, and, you know, Nigerians are very shy people. They're very respected people too. They respect everybody. And to get her into our environment, it took her like maybe a year or two to get herself confident with us before she really started excelling.
Finally, I mean, you think this is the start of a long career?
Oh, it is. It is. She's going to do New Zealand proud.
That's Melly Manuel Nathan talking about Grace Wecky. And finally here on the netball courts in Auckland, Suzanne, given where Grace has got to in just 5 years, I mean, Melly seems a bit of a tough taskmaster. She certainly appears to be an international star of the future, though.
She does. I'm sorry, Melly just cracked me up. That was brilliant. There was, you know, the girl couldn't play netball when she first went on the court, and it wasn't something that she learned quickly. But I think we're seeing the real quick part of her development now. And sure, you know, she has made some mistakes out there on court for the Silver Ferns in the last two games, but there's still that raw talent that Kitty talks about. And, you know, these are the players that we now need to bring through. And what an incredible time to be able to introduce players like Grace into an international netball environment. And I think that she will only thrive from here. So the thing that I've really enjoyed about this series is seeing that talent in the younger group coming through. And players like Xavier Tui, what an incredible young shooter she is as well. And Paris Mason, Paris Lokotui. I mean, there's just great hope for the future for the Silver Ferns. And I love that there is this ability to bring them into an environment like this now, let them sharpen their teeth, and at the same time get used to the really, I don't want to say strict, but the standards that Nolene insists on, and the standards that will keep New Zealand, I think, at the very top of netball for years to come.
Kerry, the younger players seem to have struggled with meeting those high fitness standards that Dame Nolene has set. So it says a lot for Grace, though, that she's achieved that.
Yeah, absolutely. The yo-yo is not made for long, lanky athletes. And so for her to really do that at her age now is an amazing, it's an amazing achievement. And what I've seen of her is she is very, very good at taking in quite a lot of information. She's had a lot of coaching in the last 3 weeks. And she's very good at taking all that information in, prioritising it and paying attention to she's very good at focusing in on what needs to be done at the time. And so I just think it shows that she really wants it. She's a hard worker. She's an intelligent girl. And then to go after that yo-yo so early and to nail it, it was pretty impressive to watch, actually. She's very, very athletic. I think we haven't probably seen the range that she is capable of. She's going to be bloody awesome. She's so athletic and powerful. There's a lot more to see of this girl.
There must be a huge amount of information overload. You're talking an 18-year-old, and coping with that is possibly harder than the playing aspect.
Yeah, and so we've tried to narrow it down. Yesterday, we've given her two things to focus on, and you know what? She's been nailing those two things, and it will come together. She does need a bit of time, and she does need some more work, but the way that she is approaching it just means that she is going to be a success. I've been really, really impressed.
Bridget, given the lack of international play, developing players and moving them along to national standard, it would seem a hard task for Dame Nolene. How she's getting on with that job, in your opinion?
Oh, really well. This series, we've had some really close results between, you know, the Silver Ferns, the under-21s and the New Zealand A's. There really hasn't been many blowouts between those games. So it just shows how, you know, that she's really building that depth underneath. And those players in the under-21s and New Zealand A's, nothing's stopping them from getting into that Silver Fern squad ahead of England next week. And we've seen Monica Faulkner. She's been really impressive this week so far. You know, the Silver Ferns were beaten by the men last night by 13 goals. That kind of competition, the last time the Silver Ferns played the Diamonds, they would give us over the years they've given us the toughest competition. The Conn Cup last year, 3 out of 4 of those games came down to 1 or 2 goals. It was so tight. So for the Silver Ferns to play in opposition, the New Zealand men beating them by 13 goals, when you look at it like that, it's better competition than the Australians. So, it's brilliant that we've got this competition.
Kerry, you touched on it before, but do there need to be more games between the New Zealand men's team and the Silver Ferns? I mean, they've obviously played them ahead of the World Cup last year, and I think lost by about 12 goals. But it's possibly a formula that works?
Yeah, it's proven to work, you know, if you talk to Nolene, she'll say it was a critical factor last year in terms of their preparation for World Cup. And we think that they've got better since last year. So it is really critical for us to play them. They are so physical, and the girls have to work really hard and play really smart to take them on. And so it's certainly a challenge, and it's the best way of learning, you know. If you're put under the pump and you examine yourselves a lot more closely when you don't have a good outcome. So it's been good for us, but we want to win the game tomorrow.
Kitty, do you think the players have found it quite difficult going from the 48-minute games that they had at the ANZ to these 60-minute games?
No, look, my take on it is it's actually been a really tough 3 weeks. Aside from the 60-minute games, these guys are professional athletes. They train really hard. The fitness standards to even get into the Silver Ferns mean that they are prepared and they will be okay once we run players out for 60. I don't think we've only had a few players run the full 60 just because we're testing combinations and athletes out. But it's actually more if they're looking tired, which I don't know that many of them are, but it's more because the lead into this has been very tough.
Suzanne, England are missing several key players for the three tests. How much opposition are they going to provide the Silver Ferns?
I think it's going to be really interesting, Stephen. Now, don't judge me, but I actually feel for the Roses. I think they've got the odds stacked against them in this series. They haven't had any good strong netball for, 9 months probably, since the Nations Cup in January. You know, they've been in quarantine in Christchurch for the last 2 weeks. I think they come out today. And, you know, some of their most experienced players didn't come here because of Australia, them being involved in Australia's Super Netball League. They also lost their new coach, Jess Thirlby, who was stopped from coming here because she returned a positive COVID test just before they left. I know that she's still kind of trying to help the team on Zoom calls and phone calls, but it's not quite the same as being with your team, is it? So I would love to think that they will put up a good fight. You know, they've got some, still got some great players. They've got Serena Guthrie, who'll play her 100th game, a test match probably while she's here in New Zealand, and Jade Clark. Both of those have lived in New Zealand and played netball here. But we're also going to see some new exciting players like George Fisher, the shooter who signed for the Steel next season. So I think the Silver Ferns will have a real big advantage over them, though.
Now, just on sort of another topic, I'm keen to get your opinion from the three of you. Super netball in Australia is going to continue with its divisive super shot in 2021 after trying the changes this season. How long, Bridget, is it before it's going to be brought in here for the likes of the ANZ Premiership or even internationally?
I think as long as Nolene Totua is in charge of netball and in charge of the Silver Ferns in New Zealand, there's no way that's going to happen at the ANZ Premiership. She's already said that two-point shots, that sort of thing, should be reserved for Fast Five netball, and she doesn't see the benefit on having different rules in the ANZ, for example, and having it at international level. So as long as I think Nolene is in charge, we're not going to see it here.
Kerry, your thoughts around the whole two-point shot?
All of the ANZ Premiership coaches were asked their opinion on whether we should put the two-point shot into the ANZ Premiership, and it was a unanimous no. Bridget's hit the nail on the head. We want to win World Championships and Commonwealth Games gold medals, and if you are playing a different rule week in and week out in your domestic competition, it's not going to prepare you as well for the international competition. So unless INF move on those rules, then there's no way that we will. And well, from the coaching staff, that's what we think. But yeah, it's just not good preparation. And INF are pretty traditional. They want to keep the separation between basketball and netball quite clear. They're two different games, and so for them to change, I think that would be, yeah, that's a huge mind shift for them, and I just can't see it happening.
It is quite a dynamic shift, isn't it?
Definitely, and the traditionalists, INF are definitely traditionalists in terms of the way that they view the rules of the game. I mean, even getting little changes to the rules, you have to wait for an 8-year cycle before the rules are changed and things like that. So to bring in a 2-point rule, would be, it's just a total mind shift for them, and I can't see it.
What about you, just your personal feeling around it?
I'm a former shooter, and I love the way that New Zealand in particular plays the shooting circle, and that you can be really dynamic and move players around. And I think that the 2-point shot, it does take away from the skill of splitting the defenders apart. We are in a fortunate position in New Zealand where we actually have shooters who would do quite well over there shooting 2-point shots. You know, Amelia Ann Myers' shooting range has grown, Monica Faulkner's shooting range has grown. We've got shooters across the country who can shoot long shots, so we don't need it to encourage that. And I think the issue with SSN is because they've got so many massive goal shoots, it was becoming just a lob pass into the back and then up goes the shot. I mean, we've got Grace, who is going to be that kind of shooter, but that's okay. Having that diversity of skill set is really good for our country. So that's my personal view. I think we play better without it. So,
Suzanne, I suppose one benefit of Australia having that 2-point shot is that we get to see Caitlin Bassett playing here.
Yeah, that's true. And some people might not agree that that's a benefit, but it will be really interesting to see how she adapts to New Zealand netball. I think she'll enjoy it. But like Kitty says, you know, we do have the shooters who can put up those long-range shots. And so if it did come in, I don't think it would hamper our game at all, but I honestly don't want to see it here.
Kerry Wells, Bridget Tunnicliffe and Suzanne McFadden, thank you very much for your time on Extra Time today. Two New Zealand drivers are front and centre ahead of the final race of the IndyCar Championship in Florida. Scott Dixon's chasing a sixth IndyCar Championship on the streets of St. Petersburg on Monday morning. But the event will also be the IndyCar debut for Scott McLaughlin. He's jetted straight to the US, having just wrapped up his third consecutive crown in the Australian Supercar Series. Clay Wilson spoke with motorsport commentator Bob McMurray ahead of the race and started by asking how Dixon would be feeling with his overall lead having been whittled down to just 32 points by nearest challenger Joseph Newgarden.
The championship is Newgarden's to win and Scott's to lose at this moment. Scott is a very experienced driver. He'll be obviously taking that on board. And, you know, as much as somebody wants to win a race, I think Scott would be quite happy if he came anywhere between first and eighth, as long as Joseph Newgarden was behind him in some form or another. In fact, if Joseph Newgarden was behind him in the results at all. So, you know, Scott is in a very good position. But motor racing, it's a funny old sport, isn't it? And things can happen, and we've seen Scott make mistakes lately. So let's hope he doesn't make a mistake this weekend.
Given he is in the box seat, if he does go on to wrap this thing up, what more can we say? A lot's been said about Scott Dixon and how great he is and what he's done, but what more can we say about how good he is if he does go on to complete this thing?
Yeah, interesting question. I don't know, because he's already in the echelon of the top winning drivers ever of IndyCar, so he can only get better at that and rack up more championships or wins. I don't know what more you could say about Scott. I suppose the old word role model comes in to people who are thinking about race driving. If you act like Scott does, humility, great confidence, friendly, and well-known as a clean racing driver, and with all the attributes he's got about protecting the tyres on the car and fuel mileage, I don't know that what other accolade you can bring to him. It's just sad that he wasn't able to show that skill in Formula One, because I think if the chance had come his way more than it did, I think he would have been almost equally as successful in Formula One in his own way.
Looking at Scott McLaughlin now, it's obviously been a whirlwind couple of weeks for him with Bathurst and then getting straight on the plane to the US. How challenging will that be, not only crossing the Pacific Ocean and going to the US, but also transitioning straight from that Supercars series into an IndyCar and something that's reasonably foreign to him, even though he's done those tests?
It's not going to be the easiest thing in the world. He's a race driver. He's got plenty of confidence. He comes with all the confidence of being the fastest driver, one of the fastest drivers in supercars. So he goes there knowing that he's got the might of one of the best teams going behind him. He's got all the help he needs and all the facilities he needs to be a good racing driver. He is a good racing driver. The only thing he hasn't dealt with, really, is a race amongst 20, 30 other drivers who are well-experienced, mostly well-experienced in that championship. The challenge of driving around a semi-street circuit like St. Petersburg is huge. Let's not fool ourselves. It is a big, big challenge. The first challenge he's got to do is to keep it off the walls. Second challenge, finish the race. And third challenge is just to be competitive.
There's almost been just as much interest in how he's going to go in this race as to if this is going to be a permanent move or not. There was a lot of questions leading up to Bathurst, after Bathurst, and he's kept his cards pretty close to his chest. Do you believe that he's looking at this as a full-time move? It's something that's seriously in the mix here?
I believe he is looking at it like that. Yes, I believe he thinks his future is in America. But don't forget, he's contracted to Roger Penske, and it's up to Roger Penske to decide whether he wants him to continue in Australia or in supercars, or whether he wants him to transition to IndyCar. I suspect, my own opinion is that it's a done and dusted deal that he's going to be in IndyCars. But, of course, it'll be what Roger Penske decides is going to happen to be what happens. But if he puts up a good showing this weekend, why wouldn't he be in IndyCars? I think it's a very logical next step for him.
That's motorsport commentator Bob McMurray talking to Clay Wilson ahead of the final race of the IndyCar Championship on Monday morning. Now, shot put champion Dame Valerie Adams has changed coaches in a bid to shake things up ahead of next year's Tokyo Olympics. Adams is now under the guidance of Dale Stevenson, who also coaches men's champion Tom Walsh. She'll relocate from Auckland to Christchurch for up to a few days a week in an effort to get out of what she describes as her comfort zone. Adams has been coached by Athletics New Zealand's High Performance Director Scott Goodman since the 2016 Olympics. She has two young children, including one with type 1 diabetes, so Goodman admits there's some initial concerns around making the change.
She's a little bit uncertain. The time away from family and so on, but I just think it reflects where we're at the moment, is where she wants to be competitive as possible in Tokyo. So, yeah, Tom and Val, they play off each other, like they stir each other along. So that's what, when Val talks to, you know, mixing it up, and like it just creates a different environment with a group of athletes there, all working with the same objective of trying to get the best out of themselves. It's about stimulus and training environment, and because travelling to compete's not an option, and Tom has just had a 6-month block where he normally would have been overseas competing against the world's best. So, like that, creating a group of people that are like-minded, are going to push each other. That group already exists with Dale's group, so Val's going to go in there and hopefully she adds value at all levels to that group.
In the gym also, that's a sort of, can be a competitive, it's not just in the circle and everything, yeah, as well.
You know, when I'm talking about that training environment, that's probably more what I'm referring to. It can carry over into the technical or throwing sessions, but it's the strength and conditioning environment that those guys create is quite phenomenal. So through COVID, you know, I was going down and meeting Val and training in a gym in her garage, you know, and to be able to go into an environment with half a dozen other people and the environment that creates, and music and people, you know, hanging on each other and, you know, yelling at each other to have a better crack, that's the environment that she can work in with down there. So it's, for her, it's really exciting.
Her commitment to the Olympics, obviously, to be away from your family for 4 days of the week or whatever, is a big call, isn't it?
Oh, it's phenomenal. And, you know, with the young boy Kipleli being diagnosed with diabetes about probably 8 weeks ago now, type 1 diabetes, you know, like the stress on the family around that and the stress for Valerie, and, you know, it's a big commitment, but the way she's looking at it, she won't get another chance in her life to do this, and her family and everyone are supporting her, and our program, you know, myself personally, we will do everything we can to help her.
That's Scott Goodman of Athletics New Zealand talking to Barry Guy. And that brings us to the end of Extra Time. My thanks to Kerry Wills from the Silver Ferns, Locker Room, Suzanne McFadden and RNZ's Bridget Tunnicliffe. Extra Time's available every Friday from about 4 p.m. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Radio Public, iHeartRadio and, of course, at rnz.co.nz. Give us a rating if you would. That helps a whole lot. It means other listeners can find us much more easily. I'm Stephen Hewson. Ka kite anō.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.